We ask our public employees to do difficult work, often in hardest conditions. The question is whether we will give them a reason to build a career here.
The Alaska Senate passes a new pension system for state workers. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 28th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the state is set to receive a slew of new aviation weather cameras.
They're needed in flight routes, mountain passes, smaller airports where there's no other weather information, that kind of thing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. The Alaska Senate passed a bill this afternoon that would once again offer state and local government employees a pension, putting it on the verge of heading to Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. The bill is a longtime priority for many members of the bipartisan coalitions controlling the House and Senate. The House passed it last year. Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican who spearheaded the effort in the Senate, says Alaska's public workforce has eroded in the last two decades since the state closed its pension system.
Every other state offers a pension for at least some of their public servants. We do not. And we are seeing the results. We ask our public employees to do difficult work, often in hardest conditions. The question is whether we will give them a reason to build a career here.
House Bill 78 would allow current employees and new hires to choose between the existing defined contribution plan, which is like a 401k, and a new defined benefit pension plan. The change would cost the state an average of $89 million annually, according to the state's actuary. But backers say the potential savings on things like overtime are much larger. Amendments on the Senate floor reduced the amount that local governments would have to contribute to the pension plan, but left them the option to opt out. The vote in the Senate was 12-8, with two members of the bipartisan Senate majority, Republican Senator Bert Stedman and Democratic Senator Lyman Hoffman, joining the all-Republican minority to oppose the bill. Stedman, a Sitka Republican, said he was concerned returning to a pension would risk the state's financial future. Alaska is still paying off billions of dollars linked to an actuarial error that doomed the prior pension system in the early 2000s. Stedman says there's a much more direct way to solve Alaska's issues with hiring and retaining government employees, and that's to pay them more.
So Washington average teacher makes $96,000. We're trying to get him up here for $81,000 with a higher cost of living. It's a difficult thing to do. Retirement system makes no difference. It's salaries.
Legislators have tried dozens of times over the past 20 years to reinstate a pension system. Today's vote brings it closer than ever to becoming a reality. A House concurrence vote expected tomorrow would send it to the governor. Governor Mike Dunleavy's office won't say whether the governor plans to sign or veto the bill. He expressed skepticism of a pension plan in 2024 as the legislature considered a similar bill. Well, a pair of bills in the Alaska legislature seek to create a statewide sentencing program specifically for military veterans. The Senate version of the bill has only had one hearing, and its supporters are doubtful it'll pass this year. Still, they're hoping to generate more conversation about how restorative justice programs could help Alaska veterans. The Veterans Justice Act would give state courts rehabilitative sentencing options like deferred judgments, treatment plans, therapeutic intervention, and probation. Brock Hunter is the co-founder of Veterans Defense Project, a Minnesota-based nonprofit that provides legal defense for veterans in the justice system. In recent testimony to the Alaska House, he said this program is especially important in Alaska, which has the nation's highest population of veterans per capita.
This bill is intended to use existing resources within the court system and to better and more efficiently tap federal resources from the Veterans Administration in a way that not only should not cost Alaska money, but could well, in fact, save Alaska money.
Similar laws exist in other states like California, Texas, and Minnesota. And Alaska already has two local veteran courts, one in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. But advocates of the bill say that's not enough, and that some Alaska veterans are slipping through the cracks. Senator Lukey Tobin, who represents the district that contains Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, is the bill's sponsor in the Senate. She says the way wars are fought has changed in the last few decades, and that's created new and lasting pressure on service members.
consequences of military service have increased rates of PTSD and in substance misuse, and in the need for us to really take into consideration the person's psyche and body and their ability to reason through situations.
Senator Tobin says Alaska veterans deserve more support in the justice system and that the bill would give state courts more tools for treatment-based sentencing options. But she says work in the legislature will continue past the current session, and she expects the bill will pass within the next couple years. Last year's federal budget reconciliation bill included billions of dollars for aviation improvements around the country, including many new weather stations in Alaska. But with construction season just around the corner, the Alaska Desk's Alyona Nyden reports that it's still unclear where those new stations will be.
Last year, a new pot of federal funding promised to bring more than 160 weather stations to Alaska to make flying safer in a state that's long seen a high rate of deadly plane crashes. Aviation experts and air carriers say they expect to see some of the new weather stations come online this summer. But the Federal Aviation Administration has not said where those stations will be. Dan Nisek is the president of Grant Aviation. He says that information would help companies make sure they have all the approvals they will need to use the new stations.
It's building season pretty soon here. My hope is that the transparency will continue and that we will see a list of actual project sites for this year and the upcoming years as soon as possible so we can make sure that we're ready for when those are in place.
Last July, the budget reconciliation bill, known as the Big Beautiful Bill, included more than $12 billion for aviation improvements across the country. Much of that money will pay for the new weather stations, ranging from weather cameras to more complex stations that include suits of sensors. In Alaska, the FAA partnered with air carriers and transportation experts to decide which communities most need the new weather stations. Michael Jones, an economist with the University of Alaska Anchorage, was a part of that work. He researched how gaps in weather reporting affect flights and food security in villages.
There are many places in Alaska that have well over 2,000 or 3,000 pounds of freight and mail delivered per person annually. And so those end up being pretty high priority areas.
Jones says the working group also prioritized coastal villages that tend to have low visibility and places where medevac flights are more challenging. He says the group submitted those recommendations to the FAA. Cole Pope manages weather camera program for the FAA. He says the agency is not planning to release where they plan to install the new weather cameras because
those sites could change a little bit.
Pope says that the goal is to bring weather cameras to places like remote villages and flight routes where there are gaps in weather reporting.
So we're not putting cameras at Anchorage International Airport per se. They're not needed there, but they're needed in flight routes, mountain passes, smaller airports where there's no other weather information, that kind of thing.
But there are clues about where some new weather stations will go. The Alaska Department of Public Transportation and Public Facilities has released public notices for new leases at several airports that mention installing or improving weather stations in the YK Delta, the Interior, the Aleutians, and Kodiak. There is also one in Willow in South Central Alaska. It is also unclear how the new weather stations will be maintained. Last summer, the FAA said the bill primarily funds new installations and upgrades, not maintenance. Weather experts have said that on any given day, 10 to 15% of Alaska's aviation weather stations are down or not fully working. Adam White with the Alaska Airmen's Association says a lack of funding for weather station repairs has been a long-time frustration.
The focus of what we're seeing here recently is expansion of infrastructure and new infrastructure, not necessarily how do we maintain what we currently have.
But overall, White says that the aviation provisions in the bill are desperately needed across Alaska.
It's going to make life a lot safer.
The FAA plans to install about 64 weather cameras and many of the new weather stations by the end of the 2028. In Anchorage, I am Alyona Nyden.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Skagway is set to receive tens of millions of dollars to construct a dock for industrial shipments.
And it's replacing old wooden infrastructure that's definitely outdated and needed of replacement.
That's ahead. Stay with us. A former Superior Court judge who was based in Nome faces new misconduct charges after investigators say he misrepresented his knowledge of contact with apparent sex workers. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
Judge Romano DiBenedetto was on administrative leave in late March while the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct investigated misconduct allegations when he announced his retirement. That investigation found DiBenedetto put personal matters over professional obligations and that he mocked Alaska Native accents, among other allegations. The commission issued a recommendation for a public reprimand in February. The latest charges center on a different 2023 complaint involving DiBenedetto's personal Facebook account. According to charges filed by the commission, DiBenedetto's Facebook activity implied public friendships with apparent female sex workers. When questioned by commission staff in 2023, DiBenedetto expressed surprise about those apparent Facebook connections and denied knowing about them or how they could be connected to him. The commission said DiBenedetto agreed to remove the posts. The commission now alleges DiBenedetto misrepresented his knowledge of why the posts appeared on his Facebook page. The complaint says the commission was contacted in February by the director of the Alaska Department of Law's Criminal Division. According to the complaint, the director shared that DiBenedetto's name appeared in two separate, now closed, criminal investigations into sex trafficking from 2021 and 2023. DiBenedetto's phone number appeared once in each case, according to the complaint. Each call was to a different victim of an alleged sex trafficking operation and lasted about 20 seconds each. The commission did not accuse DiBenedetto of committing a crime, rather that he engaged in conduct that violated the Alaska Code of Judicial Conduct. The complaint, signed by Commission Chair Amy Mead, says, quote, "By associating with individuals who appeared to be sex workers on a Facebook page that showed him as a judge, and further misrepresenting his knowledge and intent to associate with those individuals throughout the judicial conduct investigation, Judge DiBenedetto intentionally deceived the commission," end quote. Under commission rules, DiBenedetto has 20 days to file a response. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The Bureau of Land Management says it will convey more than 1,000 acres of land to Doyon, an Alaska Native corporation that intends to mine it. The parcel is near Flat, a ghost town in western Alaska, and lies just north of the proposed Donlin Gold Project. Doyon spokesperson Cheyenne Kupluck said in an email that the corporation started exploring the land's mineral potential in the 1970s and is now working with Canadian mining company Tectonic Metals. The corporation plans to begin a large exploration drilling program this year. Environmental groups say they're monitoring the situation. In an emailed statement, Northern Alaska Environmental Center President Crystal Lapp encouraged transparency for such projects and said it was, quote, "important for the public to understand how land ownership changes can shape long-term decisions about development, conservation, and subsistence resources," end quote. Federal officials say the land transfer was a legal obligation under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which gave Alaska Native corporations the right to select millions of acres of federal land, and that it was not related to recent executive orders seeking to advance mining and oil development in Alaska. The company proposing the new Amalga gold mine in Juneau announced Thursday that it plans to build its ore barge dock at Cascade Point, regardless of whether the state moves forward with its controversial ferry terminal at the same location. The company also provided more detailed mining plans, including how the operation could affect jobs and recreation in the area. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
There's still no timeline for when the new Amalga gold mine could open in Juneau, but Grand Portage Resources, the Canadian company proposing it, has released more information about how it plans to operate. Graham Neal is a spokesperson for Grand Portage. At a Juneau Chamber of Commerce luncheon, he told dozens of local business representatives that a barge dock for the new Amalga mine won't depend on the state's proposed Cascade Point ferry terminal.
It's completely separate from the Alaska Marine Highway ferry terminal.
The first phase of that ferry terminal project was originally slated for construction this summer, but was postponed when a federal agency asked the state to submit design plans for the second phase, too. the proposed terminal has drawn widespread opposition from community members who have said it would benefit mining companies and inconvenience ferry passengers. Neil says the only piece of shared infrastructure at the site would be an access road from the end of Glacier Highway to the barge dock.
To access this facility, we would need a road. So if ultimately, you know, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities doesn't build a road, Grand Portage would look at doing it themselves.
According to its preliminary economic assessment published this month, Grand Portage plans to haul truckloads of ore about 20 miles to the Cascade Point barge dock and ship it somewhere overseas for processing. Neil says that would allow the mine to restrict its footprint in Juneau. Since the material would be barged out, he says there wouldn't be processing facilities or tailing storage in town. The company expects to run about 72 trucks from the mine to the barge dock per day. Neil says the company would hold off on trucking during warm weather weekends and holidays to limit traffic noise.
Especially in the summer on weekends, significant events, 4th of July, grad weekend, something like that, when there's going to be a lot of anticipated traffic on the road.
Mining operations would cut through forest and wetlands in a popular hiking area near the Herbert Glacier, Eagle Glacier, and Windfall Lake trails. The company is seeking approval from the state to build a 1.3-mile-long road between Herbert River and Eagle River this summer. Neil says this would be the first segment of road that would eventually intersect Herbert Glacier Trail, cross the Herbert River to a materials handling area, and then extend to a portal with a tunnel to the mine site near the face of Herbert Glacier, pending approval. Grand Portage is preparing to apply for fast federal permitting. Neil says the company estimates the mine will supply Juneau with more than 270 jobs. At the luncheon, Juneau resident Drew Green said he's involved in tourism and mining, and that both are important for providing jobs and taxes that sustain the city's economy.
I see this as a critical necessity for Juneau to survive. This is a sustainability of Juneau project.
The preliminary economic assessment projects an initial mine lifespan of 7 years, with a total of about 1 million ounces of gold. Neil says the company expects to turn a profit after about a year of production. Tyler Breen is an environmental policy analyst at Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Following the luncheon, he says the development should get a hard look and that it's important to protect other economic drivers in the area.
Our concerns are, ultimately impacts to watersheds, salmon, the cascading impacts that has on related industries like tourism, like fisheries.
This year, Grand Portage plans to do more drilling to gather data for mine development, install meteorological and stream monitoring equipment, and conduct baseline environmental surveys to support its permit applications. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Three tribal organizations from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta have launched a new resource page for their ongoing salmon advocacy partnership. The Association of Village Council Presidents, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission, and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission launched a partnership called the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim Tribal Consortium, or AYKTC, in 2002. A press release from the organization says the goal is to protect the ways of life associated with salmon by focusing on policy and advocacy rooted in science and indigenous knowledge. The tribal organizations have shown public support for a State Board of Fisheries proposal that would reduce salmon fishing time in Area M and have advocated for bycatch caps and migratory corridor closures in the Bering Sea pollock trawl fishery. Its new website, salmonpeople.org, serves as a center for testimonials and resources for salmon advocacy. It features a collection of news stories and accounts documenting the impact of Western Alaska salmon crashes on the lives of the people who live in the region. It also aims to be a landing page where people can learn about current fisheries policies and engage in advocacy. An Anchorage group hoping to prevent the closure of a local elementary school that focuses on science, technology, engineering, and math took its case to court Monday. At issue is whether the district gave enough notice when it decided to close Campbell Stem Elementary School to address the district's roughly $90 million budget deficit. The Campbell Stem Preservation and Education Foundation, a nonprofit formed in support of the school community, brought the suit. The group's attorney, Kevin Fitzgerald, told Judge Una Gondebeer that the time period between when the school was recommended for closure and when the public could testify was too short.
5 days is not sufficient time for appropriate preparation of opposition concerning an issue of this complexity and importance. Further, such short notice lessens the likelihood of a fair hearing before the school board and of the school board reaching a reasoned administrative decision.
The group is asking Gondibere to put a temporary block on the closure and order the school district to present to the public a detailed reasoning for why it recommended closing the school within 30 days. Attorney Matthew Singer represents the school district and board. He told Judge Gondibere that a proposed 30-day timeline would cut into the district's May 15th deadline to issue layoff notices. And he said the 11 days between when the school was recommended for closure and when the school board voted to close it was enough time for the public to weigh in.
The point of the public notice and the opportunity for a hearing is not to demonstrate a reasoning by the school board. It's to make sure the public is let in and the public gets to provide input. So it's, and that happened here.
Gondibere did not say when she planned to issue an order on the request for a preliminary injunction. If the school district's decision stands, officials say they plan on transferring the school's STEM accreditation to nearby Clatt Elementary and allow a lottery to enroll former Campbell students in the program. Anchorage School District Superintendent Jarrett Bryant said at a recent school board meeting that he does not intend to introduce any school closure recommendations next year. Skagway received big news last week. The borough was awarded a federal grant of nearly $39 million to construct an industrial dock that will allow the transportation of heavy materials. It could also help restart ore shipping activity through the Skagway port. KHNS's Melinda Munson has more.
Skagway has applied for a Port Infrastructure Development Program, or PIDP grant, administered through the Maritime Administration several times. This time they were successful. Very successful. Skagway will receive $38.6 million for a new industrial dock with a roll-on, roll-off feature and fuel header. The money is part of a much larger bucket of funding that will go to ports across the state. Here's Skagway Mayor Orion Hansen.
We've applied for that grant four or five times and every year gotten really good feedback, but we're not awarded. And I think that this is a huge moment for Skagway moving forward as an industrial port and as a transportation corridor.
Hansen says the new dock is necessary for transporting heavy loads, something that the port has struggled with.
The dock, it'll have a 1,000 pound per square foot payload capacity, which is much stronger than any other dock that we currently have in Skagway or have ever had. And it's replacing old wooden infrastructure that's definitely outdated and needed of replacement.
Emily Deitch is Skagway's borough manager. Her team has been working on the grant applications. Recently, Skagway's port director and deputy manager visited Washington, D.C. to meet in person with the Department of Transportation about the grant. And Deitch debriefed regularly with the department to learn how to tweak the application for the next award cycle. Deitch says she's relieved there won't be a next time, although she and her staff were already gearing up for the next round of grant applications before they heard the news. Deitch says it was important to secure funding for this pricey project.
I would say we don't have much of an industrial dock at this point. When a firm or someone wants to come in, even if it's a bunch of cement or rail ties or bridge trusses or something like that, we can't offload them on the ore dock. It won't be able to handle the weight.
To be clear, the new dock is designed to handle more than construction materials. It is designed with mining in mind. The new dock will be located next to the port's dismantled ore loader. That loader was taken down in 2023, partly due to age and the recent construction of a dock used primarily for cruise ships called Ore Dock. At about the same time, the Minto mine in Canada shut down. Now, that mining operation is owned by Selkirk Copper. Selkirk hopes to start shipping ore concentrate through the Skagway port as early as 2028. A previous arrangement for the Yukon government to chip in $17 million for a marine service platform in the Skagway port disappeared amid a change in administrations. Deitch says there are a lot of reasons to invest in the Skagway port, regardless of Canadian mining.
We're not just talking about materials going to and from just Canada. We're talking about materials going to and from interior Alaska, the Arctic, all sorts of places. So I think that we're strategically located regardless of who's benefiting from it.
The municipality pledged an almost $13 million match for the grant. Mayor Hansen says that money will come from the port fund. As for when construction will begin, Manager Deitch says to be patient.
Just keep an eye out. This is going to likely be vetted further through ports and harbors. There's going to be more discussion as this develops.
Deitch says that although the Skagway Borough Assembly already approved a basic dock plan, it still needs to be finalized. A funding agreement needs to be signed, and the project needs to be put out for bid. A total of 7 Alaskan projects were awarded PIDP funds. Also among the grantees is the Alaskan Railroad Corporation, which will get about $20 million to upgrade the tunnel that connects the port of Whittier to the mainline track. And Homer was awarded around $11 million to replace its aging float system. In Chicago, I'm Melinda Munson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Alex Solomon in Juneau, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Alyona Niden and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Ben Townsend in Nome, Samantha Watson in Bethel, and Melinda Munson in Skagway. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.